Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to agoristradio.com.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. Agoristradio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunked. Today our special guest is George Donnelly. This man was responsible for coming up with the idea, putting together and implementing the Agora.io conference. George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, welcome to the show. So can
Thanks.
You tell us... Yeah, you're welcome. It's a pleasure and an honor. Your little Agora... .io, it's not little, it's impressively large, the amount of speakers that you had and the range of content. When I checked out some of the streams and the whole format of the page, it's like some of these other projects we've been talking about, very professionally done and covering topics that you really don't see all around. This must have been some type of a project putting this together. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And, you know, whatever you'd like to, just a quick brief introduction so we kind of get an idea where you came from and how you came about this into this realm of the Agora, putting up this Agora.io conference.
Sure, thanks. It's a real pleasure, Hito. Well, I'm originally from Philadelphia. You know, I kind of progressed through being a conservative, then just a moderate statist to an objectivist. From there, I met Brad Spangler, and he's the director of the Center for Stateless Society, C4SS.org. And, you know, I was kind of a minarchist kind of guy at the time when he started telling me about agorism and market anarchism. And I was like, you know, that'll never work. And, this was a few years ago. And so he was, he just got kind of frustrated with me and, you know, like defriended me and all that. But finally, I saw the light. You know, I just figured out how to get past kind of the fear thing. You know, when you're not really familiar with, I mean, I never heard about anarchism in 16 or 17 years of schooling. And so when I got past the kind of fear thing that, like, whoa, anarchism is not just all about Sacco and Vanzetti and, you know, chaos and all that.
Yeah.
When I finally got past that, well, Brad and I became friends again, I guess. And just the last few years, I've just been kind of, you know, learning more and working up to it. And finally, I realized, you know, we need to have more conversations going on at all times about this stuff. And Agora.io just came out of that.
Yeah, that's really great. It's similar, you know, you thinking about getting some of the word out there and stimulating this mastermind thing that's going on with all the memes flying around. And that's a lot of what got me into thinking about the agoristradio.com. And while I was actually preparing the the hardware and the software and the programming and in the literal programming and the show programming, I ran across the Agora.io, and it was very encouraging and stimulating to me to see this audio visual and network stuff starting to come out there. Did you?
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear it was useful to someone. I got to say, it was a lot of work. Yeah. You know, we had around 80 speakers across four channels. Yeah. And I managed three of the channels by myself because, you know, it was a new idea. And so, I kind of pitched it to some people to see if they wanted to work on it with me. And they're kind of like, huh? You know, what's that? I don't know if that's going to work out right, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of a hard row to hoe there for a while. And I'm just really glad that it was useful for some people.
Oh, yeah. I've only been able to go through a fraction of the things that I want to, but it's great. It's all there, and I have plenty of viewing material. Did you model this after any other online conference-type systems that you saw out there?
Well, you know, when Liberty Forum, the Free State Project's Liberty Forum, was canceled, I really like Liberty Forum, so I was kind of disappointed by that. And that's kind of one of the things that sparked me to this. And so I started looking into other conference ideas, and I found the unconference idea.
Okay.
And the idea behind that is that there are a bunch of different ways to do it, but one way is everybody just kind of gets together and everybody does their own thing, and it's like a free market thing kind of going on.
Uh-huh.
You know, somebody says, hey, I'm going to give a talk about X. You guys can come on over here and watch it if you want. And then somebody else says, I'm going to talk about Y. And it's a self-organizing system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called open space technology, I think it's called. And that plays a part here, too. And the thing is, it's, you know, one of the things is if there's a meeting or a conference going on, people should feel free to move from one space to another at any time. And that some of the best conversations happen in the hallway. And so those ideas really influenced, what ended up being Agora.io. It wasn't that we at the, you know, at the last minute, the very day came together and organized, you know, who was going to talk at which point, but speakers chose their own topics and they self-selected. I mean, I invited some people. I invited more than 200 people to speak, but a lot of people, you know, it was all self-selection. Nobody, you know, got any kind of payment for speaking except donations.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it was a very unconference-y kind of thing. A normal conference is somebody goes and picks people to speak. And only those people can speak, and it's very hierarchical. And so I wanted this to be something very non-hierarchical, very egalitarian in nature, decentralized.
Mm-hmm. The topics on the conference were something that you don't see in a lot of these other liberty-type conferences, and you had the four channels. And you know, let's back up a little bit because I think that we didn't go over for some of the listeners a basic introduction to actually what just happened a few weeks ago. There was what was it from Thursday to Sunday? Is that correct?
Friday through Sunday.
Okay, Friday mm-hmm. through Sunday. And what were the dates? I don't have those in front of me.
March 25th to the 27th.
Okay, and you plan on doing this conference twice a year right now?
That's right, every 6 months. So the next one is September 23rd to the 25th, and it's called Laozi, after the first kind of anti-authoritarian thinker, the Chinese thinker. He's also called Lao Tzu.
Okay.
And so the first one we called Etienne. That's Etienne de la Boetie, who wrote The French thinker who wrote Discourses on Voluntary Servitude.
Yes.
You know, his trademark is, you know, why do we allow the tyrant to rule?
Yeah.
Because he only rules based on our voluntary consent, right?
Right. Remove the support and he collapses. It's a great essay.
Amen.
Now, we have these several days of conferences, and you have a schedule on the website, people. It's agora.io.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go there and you can see what the schedule was. You can see all the archives. The videos are up there. And so there were four channels going at the same time throughout the day, and you could pick and choose between the different channels that you had. All of the participants in the audience and the guests were able to communicate with the speakers through text chat and chat rooms. And the speakers mm-hmm. themselves were distributed throughout the world, wherever they were in their locations, giving these conferences their particular speech or presentation through live streaming, through what were people using, Ustream or some type
Justin.tv.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So these things were live, and I noticed on some of the conferences, you know, that the end of the presentation, they would be, you know, they would be looking through their chat room and answering back, so their responses. So it wasn't just a one-way television-type broadcast. There was interactivity to it. So did you actually have a place where you had physical people together? Were there groups of people that got together for this conference? Do you know anything about that?
Yes. Actually, there were several groups. Part of the Agora.io concept is that, you know, it's for a regular conference like Liberty Forum in New Hampshire, you know, you have to go through the TSA checkpoints, you have to pay for your airplane tickets, hotel, food, ground transportation, and tickets to the conference. And so the idea with Agora.io is you don't have to deal with any of that. It's just, you know, you can participate from, you don't have to leave your couch. You don't have to change out of your pajamas. You can participate right from your house. So the costs are almost zero.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what was I saying? Oh, and so the other part of that is if you still want to have kind of the conferencey, real-life conferencey element, people can get together, say, by town, and not only, you know, say in a coffee shop, not only watch it together, watch the conference, but they can have speakers that speak in real life at their meetup and then broadcast those guys out to the world. And the folks did that in, in Keene, New Hampshire, in Philadelphia, in Phoenix, Minneapolis. And for probably the biggest one was Philadelphia, where those guys took over one of the channels for about 6 hours on Saturday. Just one speaker after another, they set up a common podium there with a mic in a bar, and they had a live audience of about 20 or 30 people. And so it was kind of funny to watch, you know, a speaker would get up and start speaking, and then, you know, this huge audience would clap, and in the chat room, everybody was saying, "Hey, are there other people there? What's going on there?" You know?
Yeah.
So that's the great. Jim Babb ran that in Philadelphia, and he just did an amazing job there. And, you know, my hope, we had 5 meetups, local meetups this time. My hope next time is to have about 25.
Yeah.
And, you know, really get this moving in a whole bunch of different directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, we could have speakers from all over the world, and we did. I broadcast from South America. Thomas Kay broadcast from Europe, and we had people from all over North America. So this really, it breaks down the barriers of your traditional conference. Anybody, anywhere can participate, and we could even have channels going around the clock. We could have the North American time zones going. We could have European time zones going,
mm-hmm.
Asian. So, I mean, you know, this eventually, I hope this becomes a 24/7 thing where somebody somewhere is broadcasting for Agora.io, you know, at any hour of the day. You can, you know, the sun never sets on Agora.io.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I can see where you're going with that. Yeah, that's great. Did you have any interesting experiences or shows or conferences that you personally really appreciated a lot or got something out of or found other people were, you know, feeling the same way?
Yeah, I think the most popular one was Mark Stevens. He had about 135 concurrent viewers during his whole talk. And Gene Bassler, who is from Texas, he signed up at the last minute. Saturday night, you know, he said he wanted to get on, and so we put him on Sunday at 9 a.m. And he talked about how, you know, the undocumented folks in America who do jobs, you know, any kind of job these folks will do, they're mainly from Spanish-speaking countries. You know, they'll cut hedges, they'll paint houses, they'll clean your bathroom even. Mm-hmm. These people are, according to Gene, this was his point, the original agorists.
Right.
Because they work off the books, you know, kind of in this agorist market, and they're really good people. And so I really liked his talk, and I know a lot of other people did too, because it brought an extra dimension.
Oh yeah.
You know, to the conference. And it really is a defense of undocumented people. You know, there's no such thing as an illegal person, of course. Mm-hmm. I call them undocumented. It really was a really great defense of these people that is sorely lacking in, you know, the national conversation.
Oh, yeah. Worldwide and, right now, this whole theme that of anti-immigrant and illegal aliens, it's just constantly conjuring up these memories of, you know, racist societies in world, you know, with the Jews and other people where these people are branded because they're an outsider. And for some reason, people today, they think it's evil to do that if it's based upon the color of their skin, but it's okay to do that if it's about where they're from. I mean, where they were born or a particular piece of paper that they hold. So I think that awareness is nice these days.
Definitely. Also, Iloilo Jones of the Fully Informed Jury Foundation, she gave a very well-received talk about cooperative community schooling, how she and some other people in her community had together put together this community school where different people in the community would volunteer their time to teach different classes to homeschooled kids. And that's just an amazing talk. And you know, you can find all these talks on our website at agora.io or on my YouTube channel. There were just so many amazing talks. Gary Chartier of the Center for Stateless Society gave a talk about personal style and anarchist activism, which was also not your typical talk.
Yeah, what was that about?
That was about, you know, just the different kinds of ways that you can talk to people about anarchism. For example, he's got a book coming out, The Conscience of an Anarchist. And so I think he drew on that book a lot, just how to relate anarchism to different people. Mm-hmm. We had a really good talk from Zaida Dinya of California about rave, underground culture, and the agora. She's a cultural anthropologist, and so that's another talk that brought a really unique angle to the conference. You know, something you just don't see talked about a lot in libertarian circles.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
And we had several talks about food. You know, agriculture.
Yes.
How to get started growing your own food, you know, farming, self-sufficiency, stuff like that. And several talks also about silver. For example, Karen Emery talking about her Del Valle silver, her silver rounds. Ron of Shire Silver, who what he does is he cuts up little strips of silver and gold into Graham cards. So there are various denominations, and they're in grams, like 1 gram or 10 uh-huh. grams, and he embeds them in a laminated plastic card. So that's like credit card sized, and so it's a little bit easier to carry around in your wallet smaller denominations of precious metals, you know, to facilitate trade. Yeah, it was very cool. There was another talk about some guys from some guys in Phoenix about how they're getting junk silver, and they're putting it in. They're doing the same thing. They're putting it in these laminated plastic cards. And it notes, you know, the properties of the junk silver coin. Uh-huh. Junk silver, for those who don't know, is their old U.S. government issued coins like nickels and dimes and quarters that have 40% or 90% silver content. And so they note the silver content on the card, and then they have an iPhone app where you can instantly check what the current value of that is in Federal Reserve notes. So that's another way to stimulate, agorist trade. And it's U.S. government currency, so there's absolutely no way that they can, say that it's domestic terrorism to use, you know, U.S. currency like this.
Okay, so they're not melting this stuff down. They're taking coins and sticking them in the plastic laminated sheets, or...
Yes, that's right. And okay. they have information in there right next to the coin. It describes the coin and says, you know, what the silver content is and all that.
Oh, that is a really great idea.
Yeah, I thought it was really inventive.
Yeah. I enjoyed the presentation by Patrick Freeman on seasteading. That was great to see that you had him there.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one too. You know, he's a real dynamic speaker, and he can touch on a bunch of topics practically all at once.
Yeah. You're talking about an international presenters and audience for the Agora.io. What can you tell us about where you are on the ground with what you see agorist activity happening? Now, I know in Central South America, along with other places around the world, more so outside the U.S., there's a lot of agorist-type activity happening by people who are just doing business and doing their own thing and ignoring people trying to be their masters and going about their business, but they're not necessarily coming from an agorist liberty frame of mind. Do you see these ideas where you are?
No, not consciously.
Right.
It's very rare where I am in Colombia in South America to find someone who's really conscious of the ideas of liberty, of natural rights, of resistance to the government. The ideas aren't conscious, right.
Uh-huh.
But there are so many people engaged in it.
Yes.
Either for people selling vegetables from a cart, you know, they roll uh-huh. the cart down the street and they call out with a little megaphone, inviting people to come out and buy their stuff. Or there's a lot of door-to-door sales of even stuff like fresh strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
The underground economy here is huge. You see people on street corners with little natural gas or propane-powered carts where they're cooking up snacks or small meals. Right. So the underground economy here is huge, and the government is not as strong here. For example, when you see in downtown, the sidewalks are just covered with people that have they lay out their wares on a little blanket and sell it to passersby. And when government police have come in to shut that down and even seize people's merchandise, it has resulted in just an enormous, hullabaloo, a big strike of people.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of solidarity here. So you'll see solidarity from other working people, like truck drivers or taxi drivers or just regular people. Recently in the capital city, Bogota, there was a truck driver strike, and they blocked major roads all over the city.
Right.
If this had happened in the U.S., I mean, they would have, like, called out SWAT, and, you know, there'd be people dead on the street. Mm-hmm. But here, the government allowed it to happen. They didn't send in troops or anything.
Yeah, and I have an interesting story similar to that. I saw one Central American, Latin American city a few years back. The government was planning to expand the airport. And they didn't have enough space to grow it, so they figured they were just going to put up a new one in another part of the outside the city. And they had all these meetings, and you know, the guys in suits, they made all their decisions, and they essentially grabbed a large tract of land that made up private property of many farmers in this in a small little city, a little pueblito. And when the people found out about it, within 24, 48 hours, they had gone out into the streets protesting, and they were out there with their machetes. And the police were trying to get them to, you know, disperse and stop, and they were clashing. And, you know, what, like you mentioned with the trucker strike, a lot of times you see some of that stuff happen, and what's fascinating about it, and for me, what I like about certain aspects of it, is not necessarily the fact that some union got together and shut down everything. It has to do with the fact that people were able to go out there and do it without getting slaughtered by a militarized police force. And that was the point that you brought up there. And they actually canceled the project for the airport, even though all these people were doing their, it was getting a little violent there in the lake. So when you see that, you know, in the U.S., a lot of times they'll talk about Central America and socialist and communist leaning countries, and they're not, you know, third world, and they're not, they have all these laws that, would seem to be more socialist than what you would see in the U.S., but what you find out is that they may have many laws on the books that many times are a little bit tougher or more strict about what you're supposed to do. But enforcement of them can be lean and lax or non-existent, and the fact that so many people ignore the laws makes the laws almost moot, because it's about the power and the enforcement on the ground rather than what kind of scribblings are in the national laws.
That's a really great point. I think in the U.S., we've developed to such a point where there's so much verbiage going around, it disarms us. Whereas here, a lot of people still live in a very, you know, if from a first world perspective, you might say in an undeveloped way. And so they don't, you know, all this verbiage that you get at universities and in the media and whatnot, it doesn't count for anything here. People, even though they're not acquainted with all, you know, the philosophy and, you know, all the rhetorical objections and whatnot, they just get it. It's like a natural thing, you know, you're stealing from me. You're interfering with my ability to earn an income. You know, you're hurting people. It's so much more simple. And that's really, you know, when you reduce down all the verbiage, when you cook it down, when you get to the essence, that's what it's all about. You're hurting people. Stop it. And, you know, we're not going to let you do it. And that's a great spirit that people have here in Colombia, something that I love, where this resistance, this strength, and this just human solidarity, where even it's expressed in as simple a way as if you're walking down the street and you ask somebody for how to get to somewhere, they're going to tell you, and they might even take you there, go out of their way and spend their time to take you there, because here people will give you the shirt off their back. And that's something that's been lost in America.
A little bit of that was covered in our show. I believe it was yesterday with Ben Godwin. He was talking about the people coming from some other countries and how their material wealth and access to modern things were, you know, how much it grew, but how much of a social thing that they lost. I want to take that a little bit further. One of the things that you hear a lot from a lot of people in the liberty movement in the U.S. talking about how the U.S. is the last foothold for liberty in the world and the way that it's going. And with tyranny crushing down from all directions, that if there is going to be some type of breakthrough or last stand for liberty, it will be in the U.S. But when you look at it from the agorist standpoint, and if the agorist approach actually has anything to it, the last foothold for liberty may be in these countries throughout the world where the black market is a very large, if not the majority of the economy itself, where the lack of respect and the for a dominant authority that needs to be obeyed in all manners, where that is, where the spirit of community is still active. Like, for example, with the agorist ideas of creating systems that supplant other state systems, we can talk about welfare. In many of these countries, they don't have a welfare system, even though they may be, some of them may be considered somewhat of a socialist country and economy. When it comes down to it, most people don't have access to any form of a monthly paycheck coming into the government. And the medical care that the government gives many times is extremely substandard, and they're getting their medical care from private practitioners. So let's go back to the welfare aspect. In many of these countries, they do not depend on the government for helping them when things are bad, and let alone when they just don't feel like working. They they work in their own communities, and usually with their family. They lean on each other with their families. They don't necessarily, you know, go out to the restaurants all the time. They may just get together with each other on the weekend. That's their special occasion, and everyone brings some food, and they have their whole thing. Somebody needs to get an operation, and everyone pitches in to help them out. There's a lot of community stuff happening like that, and this is not just a question about, well, you know, what kind of morals do we think and how should it be inside of our communities. We're talking about infrastructures that support people, and those infrastructures are the infrastructures, are examples of infrastructures that agorist literature and ideas talk about that provide for alternatives to the state. And in the U.S. right now, you don't see that type of a thing. Most people, when they have trouble, okay, sometimes some people will go and borrow some money from family and like, but right now, you have trouble, you have unemployment. You have trouble, you have welfare. You have trouble with, you know, you have your the welfare coming in for foods. They're handing out these ATM cards to everyone now. And then this whole cycle of government subsidization of everyone down to the smallest level. And in these societies, they don't necessarily have that. So there's already an infrastructure. If you have the fall of the state in, for example, Colombia, what does that actually mean? If the agorist activity takes over, whereas in places like the U.S. and many places in Europe, if you have a collapse of the state, when I say collapse of the state, I'm talking about of the services that they provide, social security, unemployment, you know, welfare, all of these things. What you're talking about possible social unrest and collapse and Mad Max society type things in these places. Why? Because their structures have collapsed. So it's just a little thing I wanted to interject there.
You really get it. That really aligns with my experience. That's mutual aid. And the bonds of mutual aid have been broken in America. People have been atomized. They've been separated by the government and what it's been doing for the last 70 or 80 years. It's a real shame, and I wasn't even conscious of it growing up until at the age of 23. I came to Colombia with a friend of mine who's from here, and he showed me how things work in his family, and it was a complete revelation. It was really a shock mm-hmm. to see that there could be this extended family, this extended neighborhood, that where people help each other out, where people are nice and mutual aids going on, and you know, that was very different from what I saw growing up in a lower middle class neighborhood in Philadelphia. These folks who say that America is the last bastion of liberty in the world, I think they're still stuck on this U.S.-centric narrative of history that a lot of us were indoctrinated with in primary and secondary school.
Uh-huh.
That's like, as you've implied, that's just not true. There's a lot of liberty outside the United States. And even though, like you said, is some things may be on the books, that doesn't mean necessarily that what's happening in real life aligns with that. I have a long history with Colombia, living in Colombia, visiting. It's been about 16 years now, and I find a huge amount of liberty here. So really, you know, it's like you're saying, you can't have liberty unless you have that mutual aid, those bonds of friendship and family and community where people can help each other out, where you can absorb the bad times and share the good times. Because before liberty comes humanity.
Right.
And so if you can't live a fully human existence, you can't have liberty. So you really hit the nail on the head there, Hiro.
Well, you know, the person who brought this up in a show this past week, Jonathan Logan, there's a show on there called Hawala. What is Hawala? And it's a informal money transfer system throughout the world. And in the show, mm-hmm. Jonathan gives us some information on the history, and it's an excellent piece. I recommend all listeners to check it out. It goes into ideas of agorism and community and in these topics that we're talking about right now. And to bring that back as an example, Jonathan mentioned in there that the entire Huala system is based upon relationships. It's based upon family to family, people mm-hmm. to people, the people that you know, and how the current banking system is so cold and, well, of course, political and manipulative and all those other things that it is, but it's also something that is not interactive and not a human system that happens with relationships. And that's what he got mm-hmm. back to. The basis of Hawala, like so many of these other systems, it starts out with human communication. And then human relationships. So you have human relationships with people around you. You have different trust levels. These things build on top of each other for things that are social, but they build on top for things that are economic, your business relationships, you know, the type of activity that you do, who you trust, all of these things, they're all part of, they all work together, you know. It's not just we're talking about social things and financial things. No, we're actually talking about community and the people that you're involved with and communicating with them freely, privately, anonymously if you need to, freely, mm-hmm. trading with them freely, doing business, you know, doing all those things. And these big guys out there really just kind of want to keep getting in the middle, you know, taking over these social responsibilities that we have ourselves, taking on themselves. And
amen. Yeah. And that's a process that atomizes people. You know, it separates them and it makes them go through the government in order to deal with each other. That's just not healthy. I believe that system originated or is associated with Somalia. Is that right?
Well, actually, it goes back to in history to the Knights Templar and back to the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's... Listen, I would highly recommend listening to the show because it's full of lots of fascinating, interesting things. But it's used all over the world right now, and it is the alternate system to the Western central banking and money transfer systems. And half the world uses Hawala, and the other half uses... These and the Federal Reserve and these other guys are trying to crush the other system. So we go into details on that and why they're not going anywhere fast with that.
And there's a project up in New Hampshire called Shire Hours. Have you heard of that?
No.
That's it uses some complicated algorithm. I don't remember how it works, but the basics of it is. You open an account at shirehours.com, and you can decide whether you want to use dollars or silver ounces, or you might be able to use both. And you can form connections with other people on that website. So let's say we made a connection, and let's say, so what we do is, we kind of create money in a sense by extending credit to each other. Mm-hmm. So I might say, all right, well, I trust Hito to owe me up to 5 ounces of silver at any given time. So I'll say, okay, Hito, here's my credit of 5 ounces of silver. So you can decide whether to extend me the same amount or a different amount. And so let's say you want to buy something from somebody else who also has an account on Shire Hours. Uh-huh. You can pay with that credit. Hmm. And then at a later time... So now that other person owes me the 5 ounces of silver because you transferred the credit to him. Mm-hmm. And so at a later date, he and I could settle out.
Right.
In real life, we could meet up and he could give me the 5 ounces of silver and we'd be all clear.
Oh, great.
And the algorithm makes it such – this is based on an open source software project.
Oh, Ripple?
It makes it as – I think so, yeah. I think it's Ripple Pay, yeah.
Okay.
So it makes it such that, you know, you can get – thousands of people all doing these very basic actions, basing the bringing their relationships into it, assigning credit that way, and then it can all it can say 1,000 transactions can take place, and then it could say, okay, you owe X guy in real life X ounces of silver, and this guy owes you, et cetera, et cetera. It can balance out all the transactions that way.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that I'm familiar with Ripple Pay and some of the proposals and systems around that, but I was not aware of the system over in New Hampshire. That sounds like a nice guest to have on because we've been covering this past week Bitcoin, Loom, Pork Loom, which is another Loom system out there, and we have some more digital cash guys this week. A lot of commerce stuff that we cover. Yeah. We're going to take a break here. We have a special news report that we wanted to play, and then we have a little tune, and then we'll come back and close up the show.
It's the Onion Radio News. The FBI says Muslim groups in the U.S. may be developing nuclear families. This is Doyle Redland reporting. An FBI report strongly indicates there is, quote, reliable and substantive evidence that Muslims residing in the U.S. are involved in a widespread plot to develop nuclear families. FBI Director Robert Mueller delivered this dire warning.
Communities as diverse and far-flung as Newark, New Jersey and Tulsa, Oklahoma are being converted into breeder reactors in which Muslim nuclear families can be easily and cheaply produced.
Only last June, the search of a Muslim home in Royal Oak, Michigan unearthed substantial evidence of nuclear family building activity, including the discarded remnants of a used home pregnancy test. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Whatever I choose.
Okay, we're back. George, this has been a nice little chat we've had here. I think that there's one last thing I wanted to go over, and that was the Agora.io conference participation and speakers. I noticed the other day there was a chat session going on between a bunch of people in a chat room planning this next Agora.io conference. So I see three levels of possible participation here. People who are interested in getting with you and getting involved with planning this up. You know, there's many types of things that I can think of that would that could be handy and interesting to be part of this. The second would be speakers who would be interested in presenting and being part of it. And the third would be, of course, listeners, and they can keep participants can. That our audience participants can be watching the website for dates and the like, and that's quite some time off. So what is the best way for them to contact you, and what venues can they do that with?
Well, they can contact me through the agora.io website. We have forums there, or my email address is george@agora.io. The nice thing about agora.io is it's agorism praxis, so you can make money starting your own channel, recruiting speakers, recruiting donors or sponsors. So there's a lot of opportunities for agorists here, and join in, and you know, we'll find ways to make some money together.
Great. Is there anything you'd like to cover or any final points before we close up here?
Sure. I've got a project right now. It's called Op Common Sense. You can find it at indiegogo.com/commonsense or at freemeproject.com. The idea is we're going to hand out a series of 18 pamphlets from a libertarian perspective, an anarchist perspective, on the most pressing issues of the day, giving our solutions for these problems like corporations, schools, etc. And so we're raising funds so that we can just give three advertising spots on each of the pamphlets to distributors across the nation. They can sell the ads to pay for their time and printing expense while they distribute these in their local communities. So this is not just a libertarian thing, an anarchist thing, but it's also an agorist project where people can make money printing, selling ads on these pamphlets, printing them and handing them out.
Oh, that's great. I'll place those, all the URLs that were mentioned today, including that one, I'll throw up in the show notes and links at the bottom of the post.
So thanks, Hito.
Throw that over to me. Oh, that's great. Well, let's keep in touch. If you have any other interesting news items or updates on agora.io or this other project you're working on or other things that you may be involved with, let me know. We'd be glad to have you back. Thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you, Hito. It's been a real pleasure. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Great, George. Take care. Talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much for listening today. That was another special guest, and we had a good time on Cypherpunk today. Keep tuned for the rest of this week. We have a couple of more shows, and they will be, like the rest of these, quite fascinating. Some new digital cash stuff and other little projects going on. So tune in to Cypherpunk. Goodbye.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
Dodge this.
This is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. AgoristRadio.com is sponsored by MetroPipe.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to AgoristRadio.com.